Welcome in, everyone, to the Batflip Podcast. My name is Damon, here with Matt and David. If this is your first time listening to us, we are a baseball podcast that uploads weekly during the season, going over all things MLB. So this week's episode is going to be about the National League East outlook for 2024. We'll hit on some other news like Matt Chapman signing with the Giants, Kevin Gausman's with some shoulder soreness, and then Josh Donaldson retiring today. For all of you that are tuning in for the giveaway, just hang out here in a little bit. We'll announce that for the box of the archives from the Batflip Breaks, our friends over there, where they're doing a giveaway to be announced over here. But before we get into all of that, Matt, how are you doing this week?
Doing pretty good. Had a nice weekend. Weather was really good this weekend. I was even able to go outside and do a little fishing on Sunday, so that was fun. And yeah, it's been nice. Getting close to baseball, which is awesome. Super excited. We've only got, is it 3.5 weeks? I think the first for
yeah, the 20th is the 20th yeah. is Korea, so 28th is the
28th is opening day for everybody yeah. but the Dodgers and Padres. Yep. So cool. Well, we're getting close, and it's a lot of excitement. Spring training is in full swing. Games are being played fully now. I've been watching. Some teams are actually broadcasting. Most teams don't broadcast all their games because their TV deals don't work. And some teams are actually broadcasting them using just MLB.com, and they just overlay the radio broadcast. So it's been cool to get to see a lot of the games. You know, usually I haven't been able to see, at least I haven't been able to see my team very much in the past. And this year they're broadcasting basically every home game, which is pretty cool. But I'm ready to get into it. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing good. We got to see a good movie this weekend, and doing a little bit of house hunting. But overall, it's been a good time. Getting ready to, yeah, like Matt said, watching spring training baseball. It's always a little bit funny because you'll see people freaking out over a pitcher giving up some home runs or a batter striking out a few times, making an error in the field, and it's like, you know, everybody's working on stuff right now. It's really apparent. Spring training is one of the funniest times of year because there are guys that have to really try and are fighting for a job, and the results matter a lot. And for some guys, man, they've been doing this for 10, 15 years. Like, they're out here just trying to get into a rhythm. And, you know, I think what's exciting about it is seeing, you know, some of these young guys, the players that have never been in major league camp, getting to watch those guys for the first time kind of on this big stage. That's what's been really exciting for me. So how you doing this week, Damian?
I am doing great. Just getting ready for this season to happen. My team starts a lot earlier than most. So it's been fun. We've got to see Shohei Ohtani in games for this week finally. So that was fun to see. Yamamoto made his debut, so he looked disgusting, and all is good in Dodgerland, at least for me. So that makes this a lot more fun to do right now. But yeah, I know, right?
You're such a tragic backstory of $1 billion off season.
$1 billion off season. You know, it's such tragedy here, and but it's just been a lot of fun seeing those players make their debut and just get to see what the off season led to and those players. You know, the excitement for the season getting around the corner. So can't wait to get to that. But we do have some stuff in the meantime, so we'll get to get that. So let's go ahead and start with the Giants, which are just disgusting, going from talking Dodgers to the Giants, but it's how it usually goes. We'll go ahead and talk about Matt Chapman, you know, signing with the Giants. I think it's a place we all expected him to sign early in the offseason. I mean, I don't know what, looking back at our predictions, what did we have here? For position.
You had Giants.
I think I had Cubs.
You did.
Matt had Cubs. David had Yankees. I did have Giants. Mm-hmm. So you guys suck. I am very good at this. it's not the deal we all thought, though. You know, we thought he'd come in getting over $100+ million. And Scott Boras strikes again on this, having to take similar to the Cody Bellinger contract. It's a 3-year, $54 million deal. Has options after each season there. So I think it's 18 and 20 or something like that. It's what the 18 gets all the way across.
Something like that.
And then there is an option for a mutual $20 million for 2024 to make it a 4-year deal. But just a really weird offseason that it's still going. We still have Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery out there. Yep. But The Forest clients kind of seem to getting ready to start signing here, obviously with Bellinger and now Chapman to the Giants. But Matt, what was your overall take on Chapman going to the Giants in general, but for the contract that he ended up taking here?
I think Scott Boras has just had a rough offseason, honestly. I mean, I don't think that Matt Chapman, you could make an argument for me that, you know, Cody Bellinger, that contract made sense to do the short term to prove that bounce back last year was real. And, you know, he can hit the market again next year. And if he puts that same season up again, like he could be in that real contract. I don't think Matt Chapman's going to be in that territory. He's a pretty consistent player. I mean, he's been a little bit above league average hitter at third base while playing elite third base defense for 3 or 4 years in a row, or for his entire career, really. I mean, he had that 1 year in 2018 where he was really good at the plate too. But other than that, he's been a 110 to 120 WRC plus guy who, you know, hits, you know, for a decent amount of power, strikes out a lot, does have pretty good on base numbers, walking, or at least he walks a good bit. His average is always going to be low, but he's pretty well-rounded in other facets of his game. So, I mean, for a guy that's consistent like that, that probably doesn't have the same kind of upside as some of these other, you know, free agents, maybe, like, you know, the fact if he puts up a 3.5 to 4 win season again, like, I don't know how much it's going to move the needle next year in negotiations, especially when in a crowded market. So I really don't like this deal very much for Matt Chapman. I would have just taken I'm pretty sure the Blue Jays offered him like $120 million at the beginning of the offseason or something. They said like 6 years, 120. Like, I mean, he would make the same AAV as he's making in this deal back then with, you know, but for 6 years. So I would have just taken that deal. I really always thought that what they were asking for Matt Chapman was way over the top. So, you know, and that's kind of been the case with all these Boras guys. Chapman's a real similar free agent to me to Jordan Montgomery in that way too, where it's like Jordan Montgomery's probably at his peak. He's probably not going to get any better. He's proven what he is. And, you know, if you're trying to ask for like Aaron Nola type money, you're probably not going to get it because he's not as good as Aaron Nola and he probably never will be. Chapman's kind of the same way where he's, you know, if you're asking for Alex Bregman money or something, like, you know, you're not going to get it because he's not that good. He's a good player, but he's not like an elite player. So we'll see what happens next offseason with it. I mean, obviously it's possible that he comes out, just has the biggest season of his career, but I'd be surprised, and especially playing in San Francisco in that stadium, it's going to be tough for him. You know, it's a right-handed hitter that you know, it's a high strikeout rate that relies on hitting home runs. Like, you know, it's gonna be tough for him in that ballpark, so we'll see what happens. It's a good deal for the Giants. I mean, they needed a third baseman and they added a pretty good one. That's, I mean, he's gonna be good for them. It's just a matter of, like, I don't think there's a lot of upside to this for Chapman.
Yeah, I mean, the big point there is that Boras misses out on getting a client a nine-figure contract at $100 to $120 million with the Blue Jays. And that obviously hurts the Blue Jays' chances, too. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago on our AL East breakdown, right? I mean, you know, they're running out either Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or, you know, Kevin Biggio at third base right now. They're surely missing Matt Chapman, but they offered him a really good contract, and here he is, you know, signing for $20 million a year with the Giants, you know, with opt-outs and a short-term deal trying to bounce back. I don't think he's going to get more than what the Blue Jays offered him, like Matt said. You know, and Matt Chapman's got a case of the savant stuff where he's really, really strong at getting those exit velocities, getting the sliders up on savant, but it's not translating to that on-the-field production because he's hitting the ball opposite field a lot and he's not really pulling the ball for power. And if he's doing that in the Giants stadium, he's just going to hit the fly balls to right field a whole lot, right? It's not a park that's going to work for Matt Chapman's strength of driving the ball the opposite way. So, you know, like Matt said, this is a little bit of a questionable contract. I was just expecting them to accept a lower, like, AAV for more years to try to get Chapman locked up long term, but they're doing the short term with opt outs. You know, it's kind of the trend. We've seen it for a few years now with Marcus Stroman and some other guys where they'll just bet on themselves, try to get two year deals with opt outs and see if they can't get high AAVs every single year. So we'll talk about another high AAV deal here in a little bit, but yeah, Matt Chapman, a little bit questionable in terms of the quality of that deal.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I could say about why it might be an okay deal for Chapman to go out to the market next year is just because he's not going to have the qualifying offer attached anymore.
That's true.
And San Francisco's not a great place to hit homers, but if you do want to hit homers there, you do want to be a right-handed hitter. He will play in other hitter-friendly ballparks, you know, Coors Field for what, some 9 games or something as well. Dodger Stadium has turned into more of a home run heavy ballpark, especially for righties. So I think Chapman going there, I guess there was some stuff that he didn't really like the renovations at Rogers Center. It messed with the batter's eye for him. So maybe going to a different place where and seeing there, playing for another manager where you're really comfortable with Bob Melvin from his time in Oakland, and then going being able to go out to the market next year with no qualifying offer attached. And then you only have to beat, what, like 2 years at $18 million, so like 2 for what, 36 or something is what he'd have to beat next year. So like I don't think it's a terrible deal. Now, is it better than the deal he turned down, you know, when is it last year or earlier this offseason from Toronto, or even the big deal that he turned down from Oakland, which was like 10 years for 150 or something then too? Like, probably not. But I think this deal makes a lot of sense too for him, just being able to go out to the market with no qualifying offer attached, because I do think that hindered his market a good bit in that aspect. But
I think I heard somewhere earlier too that Oakland offered him a big contract, believe it or not, back in like 2020, like a huge extension.
Yeah, it was like 10 years. It was like 10 years, 150 or something, or 180 or something. It was something big.
Yeah, he would have. I mean, he should have taken that. But you know, that's the risk that you run. Everyone criticizes teams that we'll talk about in a little while that extend young players and take on some risk, because they're not sure that they're going to age and they're not sure they're going to be able to maintain. But sometimes that's a good deal for a player to take, because, I mean, that probably would have been the move for Chapman.
Yeah. So let's go from one old Oakland to Toronto third baseman to another Oakland to Toronto third baseman. And that is that Josh Donaldson announced on Sean Casey's podcast today that he was retiring from Major League Baseball, former MVP award winner. Did he ever win a World Series? Was he on any of those teams?
No.
He was never on. Wasn't. He did not. Nope. Did never win a World Series. But Josh Donaldson did have a good career, especially some of those years in Oakland to Toronto there. Yeah. So Josh Donaldson retired from baseball. Matt, I know he played on your Braves for a little bit. He's close to you. So.
Yeah. He also played at Auburn. He's one of those guys that he's one of those late bloomer types. He started off as a catcher and he got traded. I looked up the trade earlier from the Cubs to the A's, and it was really Rich Harden. That's who it was. Yep, he got traded for Rich Harden. Yeah. So he's originally a Cub, and then he, you know, went to Oakland and they moved him from catching to third base, where he was able to kind of, you know, not worry quite as much about being behind the plate, and then, you know, not having that wear and tear of being behind the plate affecting him, you know, at the plate. And in, he just took off. I mean, in 2013, 7.3 WAR in his first full season in the big leagues. And from then on, he was awesome. He put up an almost 9 WAR season in 2015 on the way to winning MVP, which, I mean, it was one of those, him and Miguel Cabrera and some other guys won MVPs that Mike Trout should have won. But I mean, he deserved an MVP. I mean, that was a 9 WAR season. It's hard to say no to him winning the MVP. It's not like it was, you know, some gigantic thing. But yeah, I mean, he was awesome. He, you know, bounced around a little bit late in his career, went to Atlanta and had a really good year in 2019 after being injured a bit in 2018. You know, went to Minnesota and had a lot of injury issues, but he had a pretty good year in 2021 even. He went to the Yankees and struggled late in his career, but he, you know, he's one of those guys that he got such a late start. He really didn't have his first full season in the big leagues till he was 27. That's probably going to cost him the Hall of Fame, because he put up over 45 wins above replacement in his career. If he had had, you know, 3 or 4 years early, like a lot of players have, like if he had played at age 24, 25, 26 as a regular, he probably would have enough WAR to be in that Hall of Fame discussion. But he just, you know, the longevity wasn't quite there from him. And it's really good to see him. He's got a pretty interesting backstory from where he came from and stuff, too. So I'd encourage anybody to kind of look it up and everything. He's an interesting guy. So it was really cool for him to, you know, for him to have such a successful career, and congratulations to him on it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I'll know, I like to bring up the Hall of Fame, and Matt mentioned it kind of briefly, but I, you know, I think he's just a teensy bit short.
Yeah.
Right. Just the one MVP. He wasn't really a renowned defender once he left Oakland. And at once he won the MVP, like, you know, played a lot of DH late in his career. He's got all the longevity issues of guys like Andrew Jones, but with a slightly worse peak. You know, I don't think Donaldson quite has it, right? Only 279 career homers. Didn't get like 1,000 runs, scored 1,000 RBI. Like, just some of the basic counting stats that you might need. He was a really good player, right? And I think, you know, maybe one of the most memorable third basemen of the 2010s. But ultimately, you know, I think he'll go down as one of the Hall of really good guys. And a little unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, we've mentioned it, right? He kind of ended on a sour note a little bit, kind of some abrasive reports coming out about him. And I think those are kind of what are ultimately going to prevent him from getting in even more so than the play on the field. Like, it's really close, but he's kind of known as an abrasive guy, and I think that the reporters are definitely the ones peddling that, and they're the ones voting on the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, my vote would be he is not going to get in, regardless of how good he was.
So we'll go from a player that played in Toronto to another player that played in Toronto, or does play in Toronto, actually, right now, and that is Kevin Gausman. It was reported today that he had some shoulder soreness, did have an MRI, doesn't look like it's too much structural damage or anything there. But it is worth mentioning that, you know, he did have to get shut down for a little bit, and we aren't sure what the severity is going to be long-term, but, that would be a big hit to that Toronto rotation, who also, you know, Alek Manoah has not looked that great to start spring either.
He's hurt. He's got the shoulder soreness as well. So, yeah, I mean, that rotation was looking so deep for a while, where it's like you have four really good ones, and then you've got one that has within the last 2 years been a Cy Young candidate, but was awful last year, that you think maybe he could even be a fifth guy that is like, you've got a five deep of really good pitchers, and now you're missing two of them already. You know, of course, Gossman's might not be very severe, but it could also be something where you never want to hear shoulder fatigue, shoulder soreness this early, even if they do an MRI and it says no. You know, we've saw it last year with Brandon Woodruff. We saw it last year with Kyle Wright. We've seen it with a bunch of different guys. When you hear shoulder soreness and, you know, in early March, you kind of think, uh-oh, even if it's not something that's already showing up on MRIs and everything. So hopefully he's all right, because he's – I mean, that's a big deal. You know, we were discussing whether we wanted to even talk about it before the show. And I'm like, well, Kevin Gausman, he's like a Cy Young candidate. I mean, he's been like one of the best pitchers in baseball for 2 or 3 years, and he's on a contender. And I mean, I don't think people have talked about it very much, but it's a pretty big deal.
Last three full seasons, the top player, top pitcher in total wins above replacement, Zach Wheeler was 17. Number two, Kevin Gausman was 16.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that's what you're talking about. It's a top two pitcher in baseball over the last three seasons. Gossman's been really, really strong with suppressing runs, with suppressing home runs, especially using that splitter to get ground balls and strikeouts. And yeah, if Toronto loses Gossman, that is a severe blow to their playoff hopes. We had already kind of dumped on their playoff hopes a good bit back in our AL East breakdown, like I mentioned earlier, but yeah, I mean, this losing Gausman for any length of time is detrimental to their hopes to get a wild card spot.
Yeah, it's not a great deal for them there. But let's jump and announce the Batflip Breaks giveaway winner of the 2023 Topps Archive Blaster Box for their February giveaway. So the winner is going to be DJ Cards on X. His at is DJ Cards 7. So you are the winner of the 2023 Blaster giveaway box. We will be in touch with you shortly in the next day or two to get all your information and send that your way. So congratulations to DJ Card 7 on your win of a Blaster box giveaway. So let's transition over to our National League East division outlook now. And we'll go start with the Washington Nationals. You know, they finished 71-91 last year, 33 games back in that division. They've had, you know, a lot of turmoil the last couple of years where the Lerner's going to sell, trading Juan Soto, doing the whole Max Scherzer, Trey Turner deal as well. Last season was about young guys, and I think they got a little bit of, you know, some performance from C.J. Abrams. You saw some of what Mackenzie Gore could potentially be as well. You know, guy like Lane Thomas kind of really broke out. He had a really good season for Joey Meneses too. But, you know, last year, Patrick Corbin's deal as well for them. So what's 2024, you know, look like for them and what their offseason has looked like so far, David?
Yeah, the Nationals are an interesting case because this is a group of really, really young players, right? Like Damian said, there's not a whole lot of veteran leadership on this team. Joey Gallo and maybe Jesse Winker, if he makes the team, are going to be the two kind of veteran guys to go along with, you know, Meneses, who's been there before, but is a very, very late bloomer at 32. And then like Patrick Corbin, who's been there for a long time. So, you know, this is a group that you're looking to the future for. Their minor league system with outfielders is kind of pretty incredible. Between, I think it's Robert Hassel, James Woods, and Dylan Cruz, they've got a pretty strong little core of outfielders there that might be, you know, a group for the future. And it probably puts Lane Thomas on the chopping block at some point. If he can continue to perform, he'll probably be a midseason trade. I anticipate this team to be in the basement again. They didn't really make very many free agent acquisitions. Just like I mentioned, Joey Gallo, they grabbed Nick Senzel and Jesse Winker to see probably if they can just flip those guys at the deadline, you know, get a little bit of reclamation out of them. And I would say this group is going to deal from their bullpen this season. They actually have a really strong bullpen. I want to note Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, Tanner Rainey, and then their free agent guy, Dylan Floro. That's a pretty solid group, actually, that is going to put together a lot of strikeouts and might have somebody break out in a big way. Whoever wins that closer job, the Fangraphs resources has it as Finnegan. It could be Finnegan or Harvey, but I anticipate that one of those guys knocks down the closer's job and ends up getting traded at the deadline for a pretty decent sized haul. And you know, that's what this group's going to go for. I mean, offseason grade wise, we've been doing the letter grade. I'd give them like a D, but that's not the goal of this organization, right? They're not trying to win right now. They're waiting for their outfield to come through the minors. So, you know, this is a pretty expected offseason. They've got some reclamations. It's fine. But they're not expecting to win this NL East anytime soon.
Yeah. The Nationals are awful. I mean, they really are the major league level. Like, you know, the thing that worries me a little bit about this franchise is that they have not done a very good job developing their players when they get them. You know, guys like, you know, Keibert Ruiz hasn't really developed into a high caliber big leaguer after they got him. He has showed a lot of promise as a prospect, and he was the centerpiece of the Trey Turner trade. He just hadn't really developed that well. Pitching hasn't developed very well for the Nationals. You know, you look at Josiah Gray, he's just been pretty average, probably below average, honestly. He's still young and he throws hard, but it hadn't been pretty. Mackenzie Gore hasn't been great. You know, they haven't figured out the strike throwing thing consistently. It's been some injury issues with him as well. So, like, a big part of their season this year is going to be, can you get those guys to take a step forward? C.J. Abrams did take a step forward last year, but he still was just okay, and I'd like to see him take a bigger step this year. I think it's possible. He's still got that athleticism, and he's still, you know, a talented guy. He's a former high-rated prospect. He came up way too early. He should not have come up when he did for the Padres. They were desperate because they had injuries, and he kind of got exposed at the big league level, and it's kind of been one of those, like, up-and-down type things for him that, you know, he needs to play every day, and he will for the Nationals. And you kind of saw it late last year where he's played a little bit better after getting a lot of opportunity for them. You know, and I just don't know, you know, the breakouts they've had, like Lane Thomas and Joey Meneses. I just don't know how sustainable those guys are, especially Lane Thomas. I think he had a great year last year. I really like him. But, you know, I just don't know how much he's going to be able to sustain what he did last year. And then, I mean, the veterans they brought in, I mean, there's a world where Joey Gallo does better. Jesse Winker's dealt with a lot of injuries the last couple of years. There's a world where he has a good year, but, you know, and you could flip them if they do. But the big thing is, like David said, the farm system, they have gotten a lot better. But again, you know, you look at their development, like Robert Hassel went from being a top, you know, what, he's like a top 20 prospect in baseball when they got him. And he's like not even in the top 10 in the org anymore because he struggled so bad last year. And then you look at, you know, you've got, you know, James Woods looked really good this spring, and Dylan Cruz, obviously being a, you know, his first year, full year in pro ball. I mean, both of those guys you can see at the big league level this year, that'll give him a shot in the arm. But, you know, we'll see what happens with this franchise. There have been questions about the ownership in the past too. And they've got bad contracts, with Corbin and Strasburg, but I believe this is Corbin's last year.
It is.
So
yeah, that's what Damian said.
They'll get off that money. I think it's like $25 million or something they'll clear off of him. And then I think Strasburg maybe has three more years on his deal.
Yeah.
So,
this isn't an organization that money's going to be a factor for them for a while.
Yeah, and you know, you can, once you clear Patrick Corbin, and if some of these young guys come up next year, there's a world where they can start to look to the future. But this is going to be a rough year for the Nationals. Like, it really is. They're in a good division. There's not another really weak team in their division. They're going to be the team that gets beat up on in this division.
They did win 71 games last year, and their roster hasn't changed that much. So I don't hate them as much as like the A's, but yeah, I mean they're gonna be hovering right around 70 wins again, I think.
Yeah. So let's jump over to the New York Mets, who finished at 75-87 last year, 29 games back in this division. They've already lost their prototypical ace in Kodai Senga for, you know, who knows how long, probably a couple months into the season at least. They have some question marks around what they're going to do with some of their prospects, you know, at third base. Is it Brett Baty going to break out and take over that job? What's Mark Vientos going to look like? They already lost Ronnie Mauricio for the season with a torn ACL as well. And that pitching staff just looks horrendous right now. But Matt, we know you love the Mets. You're a big time Mets fan over there. So what do you think about what the Mets you know, outlook for 2024 looks like?
Well, so here's the thing. The Mets are a weird team because they're obviously in some kind of reset, but they still have pretty good players. They've got about six good veterans in their lineup. Like, you've got 31-year-old Brandon Nimmo, 32-year-old Jeff McNeil, 30-year-old Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso is 29. He's, of course, a free agent after this year. Starling Marte is still pretty decent. He's 35. Like, you've got all these older veterans on big contracts. A couple of them you kind of lose, you know, after this year. I think Marte is a free agent after this year, so he clears their books. Pete Alonso, of course, is making a pretty good bit in ARB this year, his last year of arbitration, but he'll be a free agent after the year. So you've got that, and then you've got a bunch of young guys, some of which, like Francisco Alvarez, has shown a lot of promise, but the other young guys have really struggled at the big league level, like Vientos and Brett Baty. Both of them have just been – I mean, they've been disasters at the big league level after being, like, top 20 prospects in baseball. So, you know, that's been pretty bad luck for the Mets, bad development from the Mets. Sometimes you just never know. DJ Stewart's their DH, which is kind of interesting. He actually was pretty good last year, but, you know, and then their pitching. I mean, their pitching is horrendous. Jose Quintana's their ace in the year 2024. I mean, he's their ace with Senga out. Severino is coming off like a year that was maybe, I mean, he was horrible last year. He had like a 7 ERA. I mean, then you get Sean Manaea, who's, I mean, he's at best, he's like a back end starter. He'd probably be better in the bullpen. And then Adrian Hauser and Tyler McGill. I mean, that's your rotation, your starting five. And, you know, there's really not a lot of reinforcements coming in their pitching in their organization. I think they have one prospect in their pitching, you know, that's even kind of on radars. So, I mean, that pitching situation for the Mets, they're going to have to add to that through trades, through free agency, through all those kinds of things. That's probably why they went after like Yamamoto, who apparently they offered a big deal to. He didn't want to go there. Like, there's, a lot of, I think that's something that they're probably looking at. I think their bullpen's actually pretty decent. Edwin Diaz is back. Hopefully he's fully healthy. I'm sure, I would assume he probably is coming off of his injury he had last year. I think he could have pitched at the end of last year if they were in it. And then, I think they've added some interesting pieces, like Phil Bickford's kind of interesting. Drew Smith was okay last year. Brooks Raley is pretty decent from the left side. Jake Diekman's always been kind of an interesting guy. Shintaro Fujinami's at least mildly interesting, as a guy who's got really good stuff. He just, for whatever reason, hadn't put it together yet. Last year was his first year coming over from Japan, so sometimes when that happens, it takes a year for a guy to adjust. But yeah, this team is rough. The farm system's improved a little bit, but it's not gotten a lot better. Their offseason was just kind of like, I think they're just kind of resetting the books and everything for the future. So I've actually been impressed with the restraint that they've shown with not trying to add to a roster that's at best going to be third best in the division. If they, that's kind of their thing. If they did their absolute best in the offseason and they signed like two of Boris's guys or something, they would have been third best, unless they had signed Ohtani or something. They would have been third best in the division. So, that's where they sit, and I think they're probably positioning themselves better for the future than they would have if they had done any craziness this offseason like they have in the past few. So it'll be interesting to see what they look like this year.
Baseball's weird. This Mets team is not a like offensively is really not a bad team on paper, right? I mean, you've got a large number of quality players. The starting pitching staff is a bunch of guys that you do not trust at all. But again, we when Shamania signed, we talked about the possibility that he had turned a corner, right? We and Jose Quintana's shown a bit of a resurgence of late. He's been a little bit better, and he's always a guy. He's always a soft tossing lefty who's going to throw some junk, like that. You can make that work if the Mets can sustain a potential for a wild card spot into July. I think David Stearns will go for it. I think they'll make some moves. They'll hold on to Alonso, and they'll try to make the playoffs. But like Matt said, right? This isn't a group that you feel that you can trust, and that's one of the scarier things is if you're a Mets fan, if you want to see Pete Alonso, as a Met for the rest of his career, if you're hoping to get elite, top end Edwin Diaz back with the trumpets and everything, you're not guaranteed for those things, and that makes it a very scary place to be. I ultimately, I like this offseason somewhat. I think they probably. It looks a lot better with Yamamoto, right? If you had put Yamamoto in the place of Manaea or maybe Severino, this offseason looks really strong, where they don't add tons and tons of money outside of someone who's already age 25, and they try to get better on the margins, and they let their young guys come in and start. It feels like a better team, but as it stands, right? I mean, this is a Stearns offseason. This is a Brewers type of offseason, which works well if you have an elite pitching staff in place, if you have a good lineup in place, which they do. But ultimately, it's like a C offseason. It's something that needed a bigger move. It needed to be anchored by something big, and the Mets were not able to pull that off. And I think part of that is the projection for this season. It's the uncertainty that players see that this organization might not be going upward before, it's going downward before it's going to start going back to the top again. So, I like Francisco Alvarez. I think Brett Beatty has a really good shot. He'll have a lot of runway to figure out the potential velocity issues. And I think that's something that can be corrected. They've got a bunch of guys that are under contract for a long time. Nimmo, McNeil, Lindor, those guys are going to be there. So the ironing out of the questions is going to be, is Edwin Diaz back? Do you have enough in the bullpen to make a run to sustain this starting pitching? And maybe can some of those guys that they signed step up? I think those questions are they're definitely possible. This is a team that can definitely go 500 or better. It's going to take some doings, some things going their way. And if those do go their way, then I think David Stearns will pounce, make some trades, and go for it. Especially for trading for a starting pitcher. I think the Mets, if they're at 500 or above will be one of the most aggressive teams at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I love this the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen's really, really nice, I think. The offense is going to be great. We've talked about the pitching staff there. This is a pitching staff of a bunch of fours, really. Mm-hmm. Jose Quintana would be a good four on a lot of competing teams. Yeah. Severino, I mean, if he has the upside to be, you know, a three to a two, I mean, if he's really on, if you can really get him back to his prospect status, but you can never trust him right now with the injury concerns. You know, Manaea, what can he get back to the Oakland Sean Manaea, especially with that new sweeper that he's brought out that's been really devastating the last back half of last year. It just, this is like David said, it's a David Stearns offseason to a T. I'm not even sure that if this team gets close to, you know, wild card status, that they'd really want to go in. I mean, Steve Cohen and them were really hell bent on trying to rebuild this farm system in the first place. And David Stearns, that's what he's really good at. I don't see him wanting to trade away more just in hopes of trying to go for it. For one season where I don't think that they're really that good of a team, even if they get Senga back. And what are you going to really go out there and get that's going to make it a difference changer to go up head-to-head against the Braves, you know, the Dodgers, and even the Padres, Giants, Diamondbacks, those guys. Like, that, I don't know if this Mets team is even anywhere remotely close to those teams yet.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Damian. I think if they're in the wild card, they might add, like, you know, a lower tier fringe. Yeah. Like last year when the Phillies added Michael Lorenzen, that type of ad. Yeah. I don't think they're going to trade any of their top prospects. I really do think they're committed to trying to keep their, you know, to trying to keep build their farm system up.
Speaking of a guy like Lorenzen, they should just go sign him right now anyways.
Yeah, they could. But
I mean, they really should. Yeah. They need another depth starter. So,
yeah.
But let's transition over to the Miami Marlins now, that finished 84-78, 20 games back in this division. And if we want to talk about a team that's had a roller coaster offseason, I mean, Kim Ng, you know, being let go and then hiring, what is it, Peter Bendix, I think is what it was from from the Rays. He was from the Rays. And then really not doing much. I mean, basically never even talked to Jorge Soler on an opportunity to bring him back at all. What I think their biggest move so far has been signing Tim Anderson.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we already know they lost Sandy Alcantara last year to Tommy John surgery. So he's not going to be there. Braxton Garrett reported to camp with some shoulder surgery. You know, they're going to try and put AJ Puck back into the starting rotation now.
Be interesting.
And do that. And then you have the ghost of Sixto Sanchez trying to make the roster right now, which is going to be funny. But they had, you know, the rumors about, are they going to trade Jesus Luzardo? Are they going to trade, you know, Tanner Scott? None of that's happened yet. So this is a team that's kind of been, I mean, they have a solid team, but it's been a weird offseason for a team that we were expecting to kind of be on the rise and maybe sign a couple more free agents to stack on top of that that last season, and they really just let Jorge Soler go and then signed Tim Anderson.
Yeah, this team feels like – it feels a little bit to me like maybe the Angels in a way, where it's like they're in a tough division and they have some good players, but they just don't have any upside. Like, I mean, if everything clicks, you've got a bunch of league average hitters, you know, and I mean, Jazz Chisholm could have a really big year. He's, you know, I think he's got the talent too, but like everything has to click for these guys to be decent. And then, you know, your rotation, you know, without Sandy Alcantara this year, you know, it's just, I mean, you got Luzardo, who's really good. I think, you know, can't ask for too much more than Luzardo. Yuri Perez is a guy that, you know, you wonder how he's going to handle a full season workload, because they were really strict on his innings limit last year. So you wonder how he's going to handle that workload. But I think he will be very good when he's out there. And then their rotation, really, I mean, there's question marks. Like Trevor Rogers, is he going to be the guy that was like basically did he win Rookie of the Year, or was he just almost won Rookie of the Year?
I think he almost won it.
Yeah, he was incredible his rookie year. And is he going to be that guy, or is he going to be the guy we've seen that's been oft injured the last couple of years? You know, Edward Cabrera, if he could ever stop walking tons of guys, like, he's got great stuff. You know, and they've also brought in one guy we didn't mention. Ryan Weathers is another guy they brought in who apparently has looked really good this spring. And he's got some form of prospect pedigree. But, I mean, I like their bullpen all right. You know, Tanner Scott had a breakout year as the closer last year. Andrew Nardi's pretty good looking, you know, young reliever. You know, they've got some good pieces, but it's just, you know, like, I mean, their first base or their DH thing, you know, like, they got their first base / DH role. They got Josh Bell, Trey Mancini, Avisail Garcia still there. I guess he could play the outfield too, but like, they don't have any boppers in their lineup. And, you know, for a team that's in this situation, their farm system is not good. I mean, they have just not done a good job with their farms. They have not drafted well at all. You know, they're kind of like maxed out, and that's kind of where I draw that comparison to the Angels. It's where it's like the best case scenario is you've got a few pretty interesting young players like Jazz Chisholm and some of your pitchers in this case. Luis Arraez is interesting. I really don't think he's – I think he's good, but, you know, you can't expect him to hit 370. Like, he had a super high batting average on balls in play last year. That's a hard thing. Even though I'm not saying he had a bunch of lucky hits either, it's just that's a hard thing to sustain is the way he got his hits. You know, so I just don't see a ton of upside with this franchise right now. They will not spend money. They refuse to spend money. If they had gone into this offseason and done like that year that they brought in, you know, it was like 2010 or something. They brought in like Jose Reyes to pair with Hanley Ramirez, and they brought in Mark Burley, and they had like a big off season. Like, if they had done that this year, I would feel pretty good about this team going into this year and having a shot at a wild card spot. But their new current ownership just does not spend money whatsoever. And, you know, at least their last ownership inconsistently spent money sometimes. This one just doesn't spend money at all. So, it's unfortunate. I hate it for them. You've watched the Caribbean Series and the World Baseball Classic last year, where, man, Miami can be such a great baseball city with the passion that, you know, a lot of the Latin crowd down there, you know, that culture is just so big in Miami, and that could be such a freaking awesome atmosphere but nobody cares about the Marlins because they're just a doomed franchise right now. So, you know, it is what it is, and I hope that they eventually figure out a way to, I don't know if they'll sell the team again or something, you know, we'll see. They made the playoffs last year. Their roster's probably not any worse than it was last year. Probably not better, but, I mean, they found a way last year. I guess it's possible they could do it again this year, but it's just, you know, they could have done a lot more.
Yeah, this, you know, everything that said, I concur with here. My one caveat is that it kind of does exclude the possibility that maybe it's Yuri Perez, maybe it's Edward Cabrera finally figuring out how to throw strikes, maybe it's Brian De La Cruz or Jazz Chisholm finally, you know, rising to that kind of stardom potential that I think both of those guys kind of possess. There's some definite breakout potential here. Especially, I think my number one guy would be Yuri Perez, right? Yeah. That guy is made to be a pitcher. He's like 6'8". He throws 100 miles an hour. He's got nasty breaking stuff, and he throws strikes. Like, if all the pieces come together with Yuri, if he's able to, you know, stay healthy and command the strike zone, that dude's going to be a superstar pitcher, like, sooner rather than later. The problem is that he plays for the Marlins, and so he might be really good for a year or two, but will he be on the Marlins for very long? Probably not. The Marlins will probably try to extract the value, right? Right. They brought in a guy from the Rays. That's what the Rays do. They, you know, look at what happened with Tyler Glasnow this offseason. You know, they get a guy, he plays really well. They trade him as soon as he starts to get expensive. You know, that's how that's going to work. So if you're a Marlins fan, you're excited for Yuri Perez, but do you even get a jersey? Like, you know what I mean? He might not be there for very long because it might be so good he might play his way right out of town. So, you know, I think Jake Berger had a really, really strong second half, right? There's definite reason to be excited about him at third base. You know, I think Tim Anderson's still got some juice. right? As long as he's not punching people on the bases or getting punched, right? He should be fine. Right. Give Tim Anderson's off to a fresh start. You're hoping that, you know, Miami brings out the best in Tim Anderson. Being a team leader is something that brings out the best in him, right? And I love Luis Arraez, right? We've been over this, right? Matt's a little low on him. I'm high on him. I think Luis Arraez has the best, you know, contact tool since like Ichiro, right? Like he's a really, really good player. But Luis Arraez cannot carry your offense. You've got to have big boppers behind him that can knock him in when he gets on base. And they lost that in Jorge Soler. Jake Berger's not a guy I trust to hit 30 home runs, right? And neither is Josh Bell. I definitely don't trust Josh Bell to hit 30 home runs. And I'd love to see Jazz Chisholm or Brian De La Cruz get there, right? I love this pitching staff. This pitching staff in its entirety, in their pitching development for the Marlins, completely underrated. They have a buttload of guys who just throw 100 miles an hour out of nowhere, right? Like they brought Huskar Brazaban back from, I don't even remember where he was, in Colorado. Pulled him out of nowhere last year. He was throwing 100 and he was getting holds for them in the middle of the season last year. I mean, this is a team that just, you know, won a bunch of one run games and made the playoffs because of their pitching staff. That hasn't changed. So there's no reason they can't make the playoffs again. But, you know, I worry that those star players that they kind of possess, the potential stars, they're going to play their way right out of town. We're already talking about with Luzardo and Scott, like guys are going to play their way out of the Marlins town. And if they aren't above 500, they're going to sell. So it's tough to be excited about this team because if they lose a few games, it could get dismantled immediately.
Yeah.
And I mean, go ahead, man.
What I was going to say too is like, you know, when I say down on Luis Arraez, I mean exactly what you said, where it's like he's not a guy that can carry an offense. Like I know his batting average is really high, and he's a good hitter all around. But I mean, he had a .393 on base percentage, which is awesome. But like his batting average was, you know, everyone's talking about how much he gets on base. He was eighth in the league in, you know, on base percentage. So you know, because he walks very little. I mean,
It's better than like a 2% guy, right?
Yeah,
like, I mean, I'll take
5.5% is what he did this year. But he had a 132 WRC plus. That's a pretty good hitter. But the other thing with the Marlins too, their defense is horrible. I mean,
Jake
Berger, Luis Arraez at second. You've got Josh Bell at first, Tim Anderson at short. That might be the worst defensive infield I've ever heard. And then the outfield's not great. Jazz Chisholm is pretty good in center. He had a really good year last year in his first year in center, and there's no reason to believe he won't get better there. But their corners are bad and defensively too. You got Jesus Sanchez and Brian De La Cruz are not good defensive players either. So that's another issue that they're going to have. I mean, you know, I made a lot of fun of the Phillies and the Giants last year for their defense. This team's like doesn't even hold a candle to them defensively.
I take your worst defense and I raise you the 2021 Philadelphia Phillies infield, because that one was like historically bad.
It was awful.
It was like second worst infield defense in the history of baseball or something like that. But, you know, like the one thing I wanted to mention here, it's like, David, you were saying how Yuri Perez and that could play their way out of Miami if they play really well, right? Well, Luis Arraez only signed for 2 more years. Like he reaches ARB 4 next season. He could easily be gone at the deadline this year if this team doesn't play up to what we expect them to be. And for sure, they'll definitely look into it next offseason, you know, if that's the case. I mean, this is a team that has some fun players. I mean, like, what would we do to be able to see Jazz Chisholm stay healthy? Because that guy could have a 30-30, 40-40 season. I mean, we could be talking about Jazz Chisholm having a breakout season if he were able to stay healthy and stay on the field. Like, he's going to strike out a ton, don't get me wrong, but he's still going to be able to make, you know, good plays. He's still good enough at that point if he were just able to stay healthy. But, I mean, it's really just going to come down to like what Matt mentioned. What does this defense look like with this pitching staff? They have the pitching. I mean, that they have enough pitching to get through all this. It just depends on if their offense is going to be able to keep up with the high-powered offenses. Because they're going to find a way, like the Braves and Phillies, they're going to find ways to score on this team regardless. Are they going to be able to keep up with it? And what's that defense going to look like here?
And you mentioned the pitching. I said the last point I guess I'll make is that they have good pitching. They do not have pitching that's capable of overcoming bad offense. They have good, but like, it's not like, you know, some of those, like, I guess, you know, maybe some of the like Tigers teams in the early 2010s where you had like five aces on the team and whatever.
Yeah.
Like they're not that good where they can just overcome mediocre offense. Yeah. They're a good pitching staff that's still going to need the other team, or it's going to need their team to score some runs too.
Here's another thing. If Sandy was healthy, we'd feel a lot better about this team.
Yeah, I agree.
Like we would be saying this would be a lot better of a segment here.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Sandy, Jesus Luzardo as your top two.
And Braxton Garrett too. He's
yeah.
I don't know how healthy he's gonna be.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, now you're talking about AJ Puck starting for them.
Yeah, I mean Puck did have the prospect status of potentially being a good starter, but we haven't seen it yet.
Right.
But we need to see what he looks like after spending the year in the bullpen there.
It's better than Jordan Hicks as a starter. That's what I'll say.
I don't know. I mean, Jordan Hicks will throw some strikes.
I like Puck, so I like this Puck more than Hicks here. But
that's an interesting thing. We'll have to keep track of that Puck versus.
Yeah,
Hicks.
We'll look back at that one because a couple of dominant relievers changing to be starters.
Yeah, you know? Let's look back at that. But let's jump over to the Philadelphia Phillies now, who finished 90-72 last season, 14 games back of those Atlanta Braves. You know, their offseason has pretty much consisted of re-signing Aaron Nola to a big contract. And then today they signed Zach Wheeler to a big extension as well. And then, you know, the transition of Bryce Harper fully to first base. What's that going to look like for a full season? We saw it a little bit last year, but this team that really didn't make any other big moves. They're a team that's kind of set and, you know, just get that pitching staff back. You know, you don't have the question marks of if Nola's going to be gone, if Wheeler's going to be gone next season, and where Bryce is going to play now. So, David, what do you think about the Phillies and what their outlook looks like?
Yeah. I mean, we could go back and clip our talk about the Phillies last offseason. Paste it right in here. This is the same team. And this is this team that's been to the NLCS 2 years in a row now, right? I mean, this is a really good roster, period. I mean, they anchored down Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, which was a question mark coming into this offseason. Would Aaron Nola stay? He did for big money. Zach Wheeler took a 3-year, $42 million a year extension. So straight up big money, right? That's going to make him, I think, the highest paid AAV pitcher in baseball for the next 3 years after this year. It might be DeGrom.
Verlander or Scherzer this year.
I don't think either of them got over 40. I think they got 40.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And he's got 42. So
I think
that sets
Wheeler's
record. It was
the biggest extension AAV.
Yeah, that's huge.
For a pitcher, for sure. I forgot to mention, too, the massive superstar signing of Whit Merrifield. So continue on.
I was just going to say, there are two ads. Are really quality ads. Whit Merrifield, who's... You know, we know he's just a contact, you know, veteran, can play all over the field kind of guy. And Spencer Turnbull as a kind of long reliever, probably maybe a fifth starter coming off the Tigers. Right. And the Tigers not notorious for their pitching development. I think the Phillies can probably get something out of Spencer Turnbull. He was one of the guys that Greg Zumach, who has appeared on this podcast before, he was mentioning that Turnbull had some really good numbers and was a great reclamation guy, and the Phillies are the ones who get him. You know, I think they identified some really key guys to grab to boost this roster, but I mean, I'll just run through. I mean, their top four of Schwarber, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos, and then you've still got JT Realmuto, you've still got Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott. This is a really formidable group that has been playing together for multiple seasons now. They've got a lot of chemistry. They've kept the whole band together. You know, and it's as talented as this roster is, it's not without its warts. Nick Castellanos is not a good defensive right fielder, but now you feel pretty good about throwing Whit Merrifield into right field late in the game, right? I mean, that's something that can definitely be done, and you feel pretty good about it. Also, they have Christian Pache on the bench. He can probably play a pretty good defensive outfield.
I was going to say he was probably the best defensive outfielder coming up in the minors his entire prospect. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a pretty good hitter.
Right. And Taijuan Walker was decent last year, right? He had some struggles in the mid part of the season, but ended up with a 4.38 ERA, right? Ranger Suarez and Christopher Sanchez emerged last year as a really good starter. So, you know, as long as this Phillies group stays healthy, they don't really have any like reinforcements in the starting rotation. Their depth is a little weak. Mick Abel might be able to come up and help them out, but I think he had a bit of a struggle last season. And Andrew Painter obviously is a top prospect, but a guy who's coming off of Tommy John surgery, I think they might have tried to repair his elbow.
They tried to do rest and rehab for like half the year, and then they decided to get Tommy John in like the summer, so he's out all year.
And that's tough because Painter is one of the more talented pitchers in baseball, and you'll have to see how he is here in the middle of this season. But he could be a late season addition for him. So, I like where this Phillies team is at. They're going to win a lot of games. I mean, the offseason, it didn't matter, right? You had all your guys under contract already. This is a group that's only going to get better as they play together more. And this is an easy division contender. But we're going to look at this next team, and they're probably going to win the division. So they're another wild card contender.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Phillies team is good. Like you said, I mean, it's the same team as last year. I mean, it really is. I mean, you've got, I guess you added Whit Merrifield, who, I mean, he's something. I mean, he's probably a decent depth piece for them. But, their roster's not without warts. I mean, I don't think that, they got Bryce Harper, who's awesome still. He's going to put up another excellent season, I'm sure. And Trey Turner... It'll be interesting to see. There were some real mechanical, there were some under the hood issues last year that weren't just like bad luck. He seemed to be a little bit better late in the year, but struggled again in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see how he does this year. It's going to be a big year for him because, he signed to a gigantic contract. And I mean, this is going to be year two of like 10. And he's 31 years old. So this is one of those things where, like, man, he needs to really have a good year, or that could end up being a rough contract. But I don't think there's a – I have confidence that he will fix whatever was going on last year. He's too talented of a player. He's got too long of a track record. And it's not like his athleticism's gone. I think he just had, like, the first time anyone's ever had, like, 30-something stolen bases without getting caught or something crazy. So – that'll be interesting to watch. And then, I think you kind of look at some of the depth of the lineup, and I mean, Nick Castellanos has been really rough for them. Last year, he had a pretty hot first half, but his season as a whole was just, I mean, he was basically a league average hitter and one of the worst defensive players in baseball. I mean, he put up one WAR last year, and honestly, his chase rates are terrible. He had a .340 batting average on balls in play, to put up that 109 WRC plus. Only had a .311 on base. We'll see what happens with him. The bottom of their lineup, it'll be interesting to see what they do in center field. Johan Rojas came up and had a high BABIP end of the season last year, but he strikes out a lot. Brandon Marsh a little bit too. Real Muto has aged a little bit. But, man, I mean, this team still, they're deep in their lineup. I think their pitching at the top end is awesome. I do think Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola are two of the better pitchers in baseball. They've probably got the best 1-2 punch there. And I'll tell you the one thing that's really impressive about the Phillies is the way that they've rebuilt their bullpen. Their bullpen, like year before last, was maybe the worst bullpen in baseball, or of any contender at least. Probably not the worst bullpen in all of baseball, but of any contender, they were terrible. But they've really rebuilt it pretty well. I mean, they've got Jose Alvarado. Jeff Hoffman had a breakout year last year as a reliever. Sir Anthony Dominguez is really good. They brought up Orion Kerkering last year. We'll see how he does. His projections look really good out of the bullpen. Matt Strom's pretty decent out of the pen. Like, they've got some pretty good relievers. But, I mean, I think this team is one of those that I think they're a definite wild card likely team. I don't think that they're, unless the Braves deal with massive injuries, I don't think they're as good as the Braves. And I think that they're a pretty good bit better than third place in this division. I think they're pretty cemented as like I think they'll win between 85 and 90 games and make the wild card again. It's just like last year.
Yeah, they just feel like that team that's going to be, that should be fighting for the division. But the Braves are just so dang good right now that they're not going to be able to, and they're going to be right at the top near the wild card race.
I'll reiterate one other thing that David said about their rotation depth. They have absolutely none, and they have a 34-year-old Zach Wheeler who is been very healthy for the last 3 or 4 years, but has also dealt with like tons of injuries early in his career. Aaron Nola's 31. He's thrown a ton of innings the last several years. You know, Tywin Walker's 32. He's thrown a pretty good amount of innings. I think he dealt with some injuries last year even. And they have no rotation depth. So if they lose one or two of those guys, they are either going to have to make a trade or they're going to be in trouble. So that'll be something to watch for too. If they can stay, because they had some really good luck health-wise over the last couple of years for their rotation. They really haven't had to worry about that too much. Wheeler and Nola have stayed fully healthy all year and have been awesome. So we'll see if they're able to, you know, if they're able to stay healthy again, which, I mean, based on their track record, they will, but you never know with pitchers.
Well, if there's one person that we trust to be aggressive, if you need somebody, it's Dave Dombrowski.
Oh, yeah.
He'll find a way.
He'll cash in the chips.
He'll find a way for sure. But let's move over to the Atlanta Braves, where they finished 104-58, won this division by 14 games over the Phillies, like I said earlier. And this is part of the episode where David and I are basically just going to shut it down and let Matt take over for the final 20 minutes of this. I'm just kidding. Just got to give us a hard time. Well, David's going to be next week. I'll be in 2 weeks. I mean, we'll do this. We'll do this whole rodeo again.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what is there to say about the Braves? I mean, they are the most consistent team right now. I mean, they had what, the best offense in how many years ever last year? You know, Ronald Acuña Jr. had his season of, you know, 40 homers, 70 stolen bases. I mean, you had Austin Riley, Matt Olson hit 54. I mean, Marcelo Zuna just decided to be prime Marcelo Zuna back to Miami. Like, it was insane what this team was able to do.
970 OPS.
Yeah, like, it was just insane. I mean, they, you know, Spencer Strider started throwing curveballs now. Like, who knows what that's going to look like.
Have y'all seen Chris Sale this spring?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Sale, I mean, they traded for him. He's been insane.
He's going to be so good.
Yeah, I mean, this team just, where's the hole? There's no hole here in this team. I mean, it doesn't matter everything. I mean, potentially you could say left field, but then it's even like, okay, well, they just traded for Jared Kelenic, who was like a top 10 prospect at one time. He's going to turn into that prospect now. Like, he's going to turn into what everyone thought Jared Kelenic was going to be with the Braves, or with the Mariners, now with the Braves. So, I mean, I'm going to save Matt for second on this team. We're going to let David start it. So, David, your outlook on the Braves, and I mean, what is there to say other than, like, World Series contender?
I mean, yeah, this is probably your favorite for the World Series. And maybe they're, you know, we look back, right, as good of a team as it was last year, they didn't win the World Series, right? Like, there's time that this team can get into slump form, and you know, last year it was in the shorter NLDS against the Phillies, you know, but it takes Herculean efforts to get there, right? It takes the Phillies to come out and pitch out of their minds to shut down this offense. It takes, you know, strange blowups from the bullpen and one run games and stuff like that, the flukiness of baseball, basically, to get this team out of the playoffs. This is a stalwart organization that is, you know, convincing players somehow to sign these lucrative extensions and donate to the Braves charity, right? Like, this is a, you know, this is a group that has dedicated themselves to playing together, and is as together as I mentioned the Phillies are, and well, you know, as good chemistry as they have, this Braves team has that same level of chemistry, if not better, right? They've all been together for multiple years now. Acuña, Albies, Riley, Olson, Murphy, Harris, they've all signed long, long extensions to play together. You know, they're anchored by guys like Travis d'Arnaud, and you know, who's taken on like an actively lesser role and turned down starting opportunities to stay with the Braves, which is crazy. But like, that's because Travis d'Arnaud wants to win. He fits in this group. He's a great personality in their clubhouse, and they like him there. Right. So, you know, Matt will complain about Charlie Morton here. I think Charlie Morton's still got some gas in him. Like, even at 40, right, Morton wants to go get him another World Series. He's the guy who pitched on a broken leg, remember? Like Morton is an awesome guy. So, you know, I think Chris Sale's about to have a Cy Young season. Like, you know, Max Fried's going to finally be healthy and go back to Cy Young form before his free agency, where he'll go back to the Braves on a 10-year, $12 extension. Like, you know, it's just nothing's going wrong for this team except for them having not locked it off, basically. So, Matt, take us through the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, it this team is really good. You've got, I mean, for one thing, the top eight guys in the lineup, well, other than Marcelo Zuna, the top eight guys in the lineup are all signed through, I believe, 2028. I think the first one is Ozzie Albies becomes a free agent after 2028, after his extension. So
that's crazy.
Like I think they're all together for that long. Marcelo Zuna has a club option for next year, which is interesting because, you know, there was no shot that they were going to accept that club option. Everyone was thinking he was going to be released outright, you know, after April last year, and he went crazy. And then, you know, they definitely have a hole at shortstop in some ways. But I mean, Arcia is an okay regular, but you know, he's also getting paid like $1 million this year or something. Like he's getting paid like major league minimum, basically. So, yeah, I mean, the lineup is awesome. The one thing that does concern me a tiny bit is just depth. You know, their bench doesn't look very good. You know, there's the question marks about Jared Kelenic being able to hit left-handed pitching. They don't really have a right-handed bat off the bench that can play the outfield. You know, they've got a couple. They got Jordan Luplo that they signed a non-roster invite. He's had a decent spring, but he's not going to make the roster. Now, you know, we've had the last few days, there's been some drama with Ronald Acuna Jr.'s knee, which really worries me because I think that last year, you know, as great as his season was, it could have been even better if he had played better defense. And I think a lot of the times when he's played defense, it was more of like a comfort thing out there where he had injured his knee originally playing defense and he just looked kind of jittery in the outfield, whereas used to he looked so smooth out there. He was really, you know, a plus defender in right field. Well, last year he was pretty bad in right field. And I think that I hope that that knee doesn't. It sounds like he'll probably be ready for opening day. They are getting it checked out by the Neil Eletroch, the famous surgeon. So, you know, it is worth monitoring that. But that's kind of an example. Like if you lose Acuna for a month or two, like you don't have anybody that can replace him. So that's one thing. And then you look at the rotation. That the biggest come apart for the Braves the last couple of years has been, you know, injuries in the rotation going into the postseason. Last year, you had the injury to Charlie Morton. You had Max Fried dealing with a lot of injuries during the season. Maybe wasn't fully back. Year before last, you had Strider had an oblique, and Fried had had like some kind of weird stomach bug or something that messed with him in the postseason. So this year, I think they're deeper in the rotation. But you know, you've got a 40-year-old Charlie Morton who. David said I didn't like Charlie Morton, but I mean, he's our five starter, so that's fine. Like, he's a very, very good four or five starter. I do not like him as the number two starter in a postseason series. I like him as the four starter who maybe throws game four if you've got a series lead or something. Like, I'm cool with that, you know, and we'll see how he does this year. I didn't especially love the, you know, bringing him back for $20 million, but, you know, he's totally fine. I hope he does well. He's very valuable in the clubhouse too. They do have rotation depth a little bit more this year. The top two prospects in the system are both, you know, AJ Smith-Shawver and Hurston Waldrop are both close to the big leagues now. AJ Smith-Shawver did pitch in the big leagues a lot last year, and he was awesome. He had a spring start today, was awesome. So we'll see what happens with them. And they've also still got Bryce Elder's not even on the big league roster right now. If he, you know, Ronaldo Lopez is currently being stretched out to start. And I think he'll start the season doing that because it's harder to stretch a guy out during the season than in spring training. You can always just say, well, if he struggles in the rotation or something, you can just bump him to the bullpen. But it's hard to bump a guy from the bullpen to the starting rotation if you really need him. So I think that's going on there. And then the bullpen is, like, awesome. Raisel Iglesias, AJ Minter, Joe Jimenez, Pierce Johnson are all fantastic. Aaron Bummer, I think, is going to be really good this year. Tyler Matzik hasn't looked great this spring. I hope he comes back strong, but his velocity's down. He looks kind of like he did right before he had his Tommy John surgery, so hopefully he's able to regain some strength, but I'm just not super convinced that he's going to be the same guy again. But yeah, this team is great. You know, we'll see what happens with the Acuna injury. I'm a little concerned about, you know, as far as that's gone, to having to fly to LA to go to see a doctor. I don't like that, but you know, if he does miss a tiny bit of time, they said it was irritation around his meniscus, but they don't think there's like a torn meniscus. It's just irritation. So I don't know what that means. If they have to do some kind of minor procedure and he misses a couple weeks, it's not that big of a deal. But I'm on the Braves should sign Adam Duvall train right now because of that. So they need to sign Adam Duvall or Tommy Pham, one of the two.
I mean, either one of those would fit. I mean, not only with the Cunha then being out, but then also give you that right-handed option for the Kelenic side.
Yep.
And Duvall has the history there. I don't see why it would be a hard scenario for him to want to go back there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when this team, every player on this team is playing like every single day.
Yeah.
So it's hard to convince a guy like Duvall, who's in his 30s, who wants to play, to come sit on the bench and maybe play once a month. Like, that's kind of the thing. And they really want Kelenic to try to work it out against left-handed pitching. So,
yeah.
And there's one other guy I want to mention real quick. I don't want to go on too long about the Braves, but Michael Harris. If you looked at his stats next to Bobby Witt Jr.'s stats, then you would be like, wow, Michael Harris is really good, because they're pretty much identical. And I think that he's having a great spring. He's only 23 years old. So I really think he might be in for like a true breakout, even though the last 2 years he's put up over 4 wins above replacement both years. He might be in line for like a true breakout this year, which if that happens, look out. But
that's what they need.
Look out for the Braves here, guys.
I didn't say look out for the Braves. We already knew that. I said look out for Michael Harris to have a
Harris is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard when he's flying under the radar for Ronald Acuña Jr., Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Sean Murphy.
Like, yeah. Well, he'd be the best player on maybe like 10 different teams, 12, 15 different teams. Like, he's like the 6th best player on the Braves. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane there. And, you know, you mentioned their depth on the offensive side. It's like, well, when you have consistently these guys there, it's like even if one of them goes out, it's like you have 8 guys or 7 guys that's going to carry this offense too. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying if you lose Ronald Acuña Jr. for a month or 2 months, that's not a massive loss. You know, if that's what it ends up being, it could just be he's ready for opening day in general. But like, this team is still good enough to help withstand Acuña being out and tread water, I should say, with quotation marks, to win this division. Like, they're so good. They're everywhere else. They're super deep. That pitching staff. I mean, we talked about Bryce Elder's not even there, on their rotation right now. You have AJ Smith-Shawver, who is a high ranked prospect, Hurston Waldrop, who's looked really good as well. And then if ever Ian Anderson can figure it the hell out, he's still been struggling, especially even this spring again. But if he could ever figure it out.
He's still recovering from Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
So he'll be back in July, I think they said.
I thought he was pitching in spring, isn't he?
No, he's not. He's with the team at spring training. He actually got optioned today, I think. But
I looked at the wrong ear.
He's still recovering. He will be back this year, though, and he would be a big piece if he could figure it out. But
yeah, if he could just figure out his strike throwing and what that changeup or reshaping his pitches there. But I mean, it's insane what we're talking about with this team. We even mentioned Reynaldo Lopez. It's like Reynaldo Lopez. Even if he gets like moved to the bullpen, it's like you're moving like Pierce Johnson or Jackson Stevens, who had like really good years out as well.
You're adding maybe a Ray Kerr.
Yeah. I mean, a guy who has like a 3 ERA as a career as a reliever, like this team, it's insane what this team does. They're going to be by far the favorite and probably a World Series favorite there. So, lots to say. But
Ronald Acuña Jr. is projected for 8 WAR on the projection systems right now. It's crazy.
He only had 8 last year, and that was 70 or 40-70.
Only 8.3 there.
It's because he rated poorly defensively. Yeah. I don't know that I agree with Fangraphs on that one. He's at least fine out there.
I watched him defensively last year. He rated where he should have been rated defensively. He was not great defensively last year. He botched. He had a few bad luck fly balls that got caught in the sun and stuff, but he was really kind of jittery out there and didn't look comfortable all year.
Anyways, that's going to wrap up the 2024 National League East division outlook there. You know, the next couple weeks here, we're going to talk about the NL Central next week, and 2 weeks will be the NL West. And then we'll have our predictions episode the week after that, which would be right before normal opening day. But anything else you guys wanted to wrap up on this division as a whole real quick before we head out of here?
I mean, I think this is a really good division. You know, there's a scenario where three teams make it, whether the Marlins or Mets maybe have a just, you know, kind of a everything goes right type of year, that they're at least talented enough to have a chance. And then I think you've got two teams that are pretty likely going to make it to the postseason, barring massive amounts of injuries or something. So this is a good division. Should be interesting. We'll see if the Phillies are able to put any pressure on the Braves this year for the division. You know, I don't know that they will, but it's possible. They definitely have enough talent, especially if Ronald Acuna does miss a little bit of time. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be an interesting year, though.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing else, right? NL East shouldn't. It may be one of the least contested divisions. I think the Phillies can make it close, but you know, this is the Braves division. There, it runs through Atlanta right now. We're in the Glenna's golden years, and they're a favorite for the World Series again. Yeah.
I'm going for 15 in a row.
I lived through that. It was wild, wild time.
Yeah. All right. So thank you everyone for tuning in to this episode of the Batflip Podcast. And we will catch you guys back next week with the National League Central.